Well, have you ever had one of those no matter what moments? You know those moments where no matter what you face, no matter what someone says, no matter what comes your way, no matter what, you're going to press on. It's that internal dedication, that internal passion, that internal resolve that it does not matter what happens. You are going to accomplish. You are going to move through. You are going to hit the finish line. You are no matter what. Now, if you're a sports fan, and I'm talking a real sports fan, not a bandwagon sports fan. If you're a sports fan, you completely have had no matter what moments, because you've had seasons where, well, the team wasn't that good, the coach wasn't that good, the star player didn't show up, right? And you've had to continue to root for your team. I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, and I just tell you, it's been a long, long drought of being a Cowboys fan without, well, a whole bunch of wins. In fact, this week I had several people, loving people, encouraging people, send me this meme. Breaking, the NFL has just announced that all future Super Bowls will be played in Dallas to ensure that no team will ever get home field advantage again. Yeah, no matter what, I'm still a Cowboys fan. In fact, I'm a Cubs fan, and there's only 108 years in between World Series championships, so I'll hold on to 2016 when the Cubs won again. I'll hold that for the rest of my life. I'm a Cubs fan no matter what. I'm a Dallas fan no matter what. Well, have you had a dream? That's a no matter what dream. That dream that's welling up within you. That dream that no matter what people say, no matter the looks you get, no matter how big and how daunting the dream is, no matter what, you're chasing that dream. Maybe it's a goal, a no matter what goal. You've set a goal in front of you. Maybe it's a small goal. Maybe it's a massive goal. It doesn't matter the size of the goal, but you have just locked in. No matter what that goal is, you are going to accomplish it, and no one's going to detour you from it. I had one of those no matter what goals. The first time I ever ran a marathon. It was a no matter what, I was going to cross the finish line. If I had to crawl across the finish line, if I had to roll across the finish line, it didn't matter. I knew that no matter what, I was going to finish that race, and I did. Maybe for you, it's no matter what when it comes to business. Maybe you own the business, you're leading the business. Maybe you just started the business, and you just have that, again, inner resolve that no matter what, you're going to make that business work. You're going to make that business thrive, that you're going, no matter what the obstacles. And well, the last 12 months for business owners has been filled with obstacles. No matter what, you're going to overcome. No matter what, you're going to get through. No matter what, you're going to get that business to thrive and make an impact, make a difference. Now, if you're married or have been married, you've had a no matter what moment, right? Because no matter what is actually built into weddings. It's part of the vows. It's the line, till death do us part. I mean, right? It's just a no matter what moment in a wedding. It's like, hey, no matter what comes our way, we are going to stay together. We're going to stay married. But here's what we know about, well, all of our no matter whats. No matter if it's a sports team or a dream, a business, a goal, or a marriage, there's so many forces coming at our no matter what's. There's people that don't want to see us succeed. There's people you know who are close to you that don't want to see you succeed. There's people you don't know that you've never talked to that are trying to get you to give up on your no matter what. But not only are there external forces coming at your no matter what, there's a ton of internal forces coming at your no matter what. There's moments where you're not sure if you're going to be able to accomplish it. There's moments where you have self-doubt, that you have insecurities, that you start questioning, that you start, listening to yourself, wondering, what type of resolve do you really have around your no matter what? Well, there's one more no matter what. Have you had a no matter what moment with God? You know that no matter what moment where you say to God, hey, God, no matter what happens, I'm still going to follow you. No matter what, I'm still going to love you. No matter what, I'm still going to lean into you. No matter what, God, I'm all in with you. And if you've had one of those no matter what moments with God, have you ever wandered away from it? I have. Have you ever questioned your no matter what with God? I have. Have you ever had some doubts surrounding your no matter what with God? I have. And maybe for you, that's where you find yourself in your spiritual journey right now. You want to go in with God no matter what. You want to follow God no matter what. You want to love God no matter what. But there's a whole lot of forces externally and internally. We see this series, no matter where you find yourself, I think it's going to be super helpful for you in your relationship with God. In fact, the story we're going to be looking at, and the first part of the story today is there's a no matter what moment. And I just think how, well, we'll get to that in a moment. But before we jump into the story, I got to help set up a framework, the history, what was going on in this moment of time, because understanding the history and the, well, what's going on in the world is going to help you understand and grab onto the intensity of this story. You see, Israel was once a united kingdom, but it had broken up into two separate kingdoms, the northern and the southern kingdom. And in the Old Testament, it actually, when they separate, they named the northern kingdom Israel, which can get confusing if you don't understand this naming structure. Well, the southern kingdom was named Judah. And for the Israelites, when they were one unified kingdom, and now that they're, well, a separated kingdom, their one pursuit was to put God number one. And that's why the great Shema was the greatest prayer for them. The Shema stated that you have to love God by following his commandments. And they took part of Deuteronomy 6 and part of Deuteronomy 11 and a part of Numbers 15 that made up this great Shema. And basically, well, the resolve, and this was directed by God, was, well, put God first. And if you put God first, he's going to provide and protect you. But God was very clear and very direct. And God said, hey, if you don't put me first, I'm not going to provide and protect you. And over and over and over again, God's like, just put me first. Just put me first. And if you do, I'm going to provide and protect you. But God also was very clear over and over again, if you don't put me first, if you start worshiping other gods, if you start bowing down to other idols, I'm not going to provide for you. I'm not going to protect you. Well, for the northern kingdom, well, out of all of their kings, they all did evil in the eyes of God. They all turned away from God, didn't put God first, and started, well, leading people to worship other pagan idols. And so by 722 BC, God, well, just gets tired of it, and he sends in the Syrians, who was the world power at that time. And the Syrians come in, and, well, they completely wipe out the northern kingdom. And as soon as they are done wiping out the northern kingdom, well, they set their sights on the southern kingdom. But remember, God was clear. If you put him first, he's going to provide and protect you. Well, as the Syrians were wiping out the northern kingdom, King Hezekiah comes to power in the southern kingdom. And King Hezekiah was a good, God-fearing king. In fact, he took the entire southern kingdom and turned them back to God. He led them to put God first again and to obey all of God's commandments. In fact, Assyria laid siege to Jerusalem in the southern kingdom, and, well, God's promises always happened. And because all of the southern kingdom had turned back to God, God protected them from Assyria. And God actually sent a plague into the Assyrian army, and all of the Assyrian army fled for their lives. But, well, Hezekiah dies, and his oldest son, Manasseh, comes to power. And you see, as far as how good Hezekiah was, and he was a good, godly king, Manasseh was on the complete opposite spectrum. I mean, Manasseh was one of the most, well, evilest of all the kings. And God at that point just got, well, he just got tired of trying to get his chosen people to love him and put him first. So God put into motion a new country that was just emerging. And by 612 BC, Babylon rises to power. By 605, King Nebuchadnezzar is now king of Babylon. And Well, over a series of years, there's three different exiles, 605, 597, and 586. And by 586, the third exile, the temple is destroyed. And, well, that just puts the end to Israel as a nation. And where we're going to step into the story is, well, a few years before the temple being destroyed, and it's in the first exile. In the first exile, King Nebuchadnezzar grabs onto some of the young and influential and wise and popular and good-looking Hebrews, and he said, hey, you're coming with me to Babylon. And this was very common practice for other foreign powers to come in, conquer a nation, and they would want to handpick the best of the best from that group of people. And so Daniel was one of those, well, best of the best. And there's a book in the Old Testament actually titled Daniel. And so in Daniel chapter 1, Nebuchadnezzar had brought Daniel and these other Hebrew youths into the kingdom, and he was teaching them how to speak the language and their customs and their culture, because he wanted to integrate them into their kingdom. By Daniel chapter 2, King Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and no one could interpret the dream except for Daniel. And Daniel comes in, interprets the dream, and in doing so, King Nebuchadnezzar names Daniel as the governor, the overseer, the leader of the entire province of Babylon, Babylon being the capital city of this Babylonian empire. I mean, Daniel rose quickly to a place of great power and influence. And in doing so, Daniel asks the king to allow him to hire three other Jewish men to help him lead all of Babylon. Their names were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And this is where we're going to step into the story. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, and we're not sure who this image reflected. It could have been the great Babylonian god Marduk, or maybe Marduk's son Nabu. And Nabu was actually where part of Nebuchadnezzar's, the first part of his name, comes from. And Nabu was a son of Marduk. So we're not sure exactly who this image was, but it's probably Marduk or Nabu. But they made this image of gold, and it was 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide. So it was like 90 feet high and 9 feet wide. So think of this image like more like a totem pole. 90 feet high, 9 feet wide. It wasn't solid gold. It would have been just wrapped in gold leaf. And he set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. So that would have been like a suburb of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the advisors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all other provincial officials to come to the dedication. Now, what we have to understand is, I mean, he summons in everyone who's in any type of political leadership seat of power in all of Babylon. But Daniel himself is never mentioned in this part of the story. So most scholars believe that Daniel was probably away on official king business. So he just wasn't around Babylon in this moment. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who worked underneath Daniel to help lead and oversee Babylon, well, they would have been there. And so they summoned them to this dedication of the image he had set up. And all of these political officials and influencers and leaders assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. So just get this image. There's a 90-foot tall gold-wrapped image of one of the Babylonian gods, and some 200 officials all standing around. I mean, these were the most powerful, the most influential, the movers and shakers within Babylon. I mean, they were all gathered together for the dedication of this image of gold. And then the king's herald comes and loudly proclaims, nations and peoples of every language, this is what you are, what? Commanded. Now, when a king commands, you do. When a king suggests, you do. When a king even whispers that maybe, just maybe, you should think about, you do. Like, there is no room for conversation. There is no room for dialogue, especially when it came to a king like King Nebuchadnezzar. And the herald was like, hey, this is a king's command. This is a king's decree. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zithern, the lyre, the harp, the pipe, and all kinds of music, you must what? Fall down and worship the image of gold that the king Nebuchadnezzar has set up. But whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. Now, right off in a close distance to this image of gold, they would have built this massive furnace to help them build this, well, this massive statue. And this furnace, I mean, the archaeologists have said that could have heated up to at least 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit. The flames would have been shooting out the top of this furnace. Smoke would have been billowing out. I mean, they could still feel the heat, even though it was a little distance away. They could feel the heat. The herald's like, hey, you either do what the king says or immediate death. Those are your two choices. So what do you think the people did? Well, the music played and everyone worshiped. Well, almost everyone. At this time, some astrologers, and these were Chaldean nobles, again, people of great power and political influence, came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, he said, hey, may the king live forever. Your Majesty has issued a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, the pipe, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold. And whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. Now, you got to feel kind of what's going on here. I mean, these Chaldean nobles were, kind of just squaring up the king in a very respectful way. They just wanted to remind him of exactly what he had commanded. They wanted to remind him of all the details of his command. They wanted to remind him that if anyone did not follow him, it was immediate death in the blazing furnace. And so they repeated back to King Nebuchadnezzar, and you could tell maybe, just maybe, it's not in the text, that he had to be a little frustrated because he's like, yeah, I know, I'm the king. I issued the decree. I'm very clear on my decree. But they wanted to make sure that all the details of his decree weren't lost or weren't overlooked or weren't ignored. And so as they're reminding the king, they said, hey, but there are some Jews whom you, king, you put them in office. You put them in leadership. You allowed another Jew, Daniel, to hire them to, well, not just be in any old position of power and influence. No. They're helping oversee and lead Babylon. King Nebuchadnezzar, just remember you. You put them in power. And their names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they pay no attention to you, king. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up. And how do you think King Nebuchadnezzar responded? Well, he was furious with rage. And the king summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar, he said to them, I mean, can you imagine the king looking down? He was probably on some type of platform that elevated him. And he's now looking at them, and they're looking up at him. I mean, it's eye to eye. You could hear a pin drop, the silence in that room. And he said, hey, is it true? Is it true that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? And I don't know if he paused and waited for them to respond. I don't know if they just shook their head or maybe it was just a rhetorical question that, well, they all knew that that was true. And then King Nebuchadnezzar does something that was unthinkable for a king, especially a king like him, to do. He gave them a second chance. He said, now when you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp and pipe, and all kinds of music, if you're ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. And I think he paused and again looked at each one of them in the eyes. It's like, I'm going to give you a second chance. I brought all the musicians in. They're going to play in a few moments. You should fall down and worship now. But he wanted to be clear. He said, but if you don't worship, you'll be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? And you see, for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, well, this was their no matter what moment. You're talking about outside pressure. I mean, King Nebuchadnezzar, one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful people in the known world. I mean, they're looking eye to eye with him. You're talking about internal pressure. I mean, they realized. I mean, they not only knew the stories of Nebuchadnezzar throwing people into the blazing furnace. This wasn't the first time he came up with this idea. I mean, they had probably witnessed this happening. You're talking about the internal dynamics in their no matter what moment. But you see, I don't think they paused. I don't think they had to consider long at all. And they looked at the king and they said, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, and we know you can, you have to know that the God we serve is able to deliver us from it. And we will deliver, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. No, don't miss this lesson. And Christ followers lean into this. They're standing in front of the king, and with all the respect, they look at the king, and they call the king your majesty. You see, we all had to follow people that maybe didn't like God, maybe didn't serve God, maybe we didn't respect. But what I appreciate about this moment in the story is, with all of the respect they paid to King Nebuchadnezzar, they still didn't back away from Almighty God. And they said, Your Majesty. But even if God does not, we want you to know, Your Majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. You think about the gravity of what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said. Hey, King, my God is able. Hey, King, my God is able to deliver. My God is able to lead us through this. My God is more than powerful. My God is more powerful than you. That my God is able. But even if he doesn't, we're still going to follow our God. You see, I think this is the moment that I hope you hold on to. Because this is what faith is built upon. That your God is able to heal. That your God is able to guide. Your God is able to strengthen. Your God is able to put broken things back together. That your God is able to do immeasurably more. That God is able. But you got to hold on to the fact that even if he doesn't, this is a no matter what moment, that you will still follow him. And for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were together in their no matter what. And I think this is part of the story that we can't miss. I wonder if it was just one of them standing in front of the king in their no matter what moment. I wonder if there was just one of them, if the pressure internally and externally would just make their no matter what moment crumble. But yet they spoke together. They replied together. And I think it was together that strengthened their no matter what. You see, what you have to hold on to is that God is able. That God is able. And one of the most powerful prayers you can pray is, God, I know you're able. But even if you don't, I'm still going to follow you. God, I know you're able, but even if you don't, I'm still going to lean into you. God, I know you're able, but even if you don't, I still love you. God, God, I know you're able, and even if, well, what you do doesn't make sense to me, I'm still going to follow you. God, I know that you're able. I know you're able. And no matter what you do, no matter what you don't do, God, I'm still all in with you. We wanted to take a moment across all of our churches, because here's what we know. We're all facing moments where we're saying, hey, God, I know you're able. We're all facing challenges where we just need God's strength and God to show up and God to direct and God to heal and God to fix and God to do something. We're all facing those moments. And you see, we're always better together. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were better because they were together. And we wanted to just take a moment for all of us across all of our churches to pray together. Over the past few days, many, many of you have just been sending in prayer requests, personal prayer requests for you or prayer requests for people you know. And well, we want to create a space where we all pray together. And if you have something that you would just like people to pray for, simply just send the word pray to 833-709-0962, and we'll send you a link, a quick little form. It'll take you maybe 90 seconds right now, fill it out and send it in. And across all of our churches, we've just created a space right now for us to pray for each other by name. And as you pray, hold on to what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, that God is able. But even if, we will still follow you, God. So right now, I just want to welcome up all of our campus pastors from across all of our physical campuses.
Thank you.